You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Well, the President of the United States tweeting again this morning, not happy with Mitch McConnell, who he says, you know, he's had a long time to get this Obamacare repealed and replaced and hasn't done it. And the reason the president's in part tweeting about this is because Mitch McConnell came out Monday at a Rotary Club back home in Kentucky and said the following.
Now, our new president had, of course, not been in this line of work before, and I think had excessive expectations about how quickly things happen in the democratic process.
Excessive expectations. Let's go now to Lou Dobbs. He's an anchor of Lou Dobbs Tonight on the Fox Business Network. You can watch that at 7 and 11 p.m. every weeknight. Lou, thanks so much for joining Mornings on the Mall.
Great to be with you. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Excessive expectations is what Mitch McConnell says. Well, how do you respond to that?
I think that's going to go right along with irrational exuberance is one of the most extraordinary statements. I think we just watched the leader of the Senate commit political suicide. When he blames excessive expectations on the part of a president who has the best work ethic in presidential history, we've got something wrong. And I cannot even imagine what he was thinking. And he talked about it as if this was Donald Trump, who alone had said, we're going to see tax reform, we're going to see the repeal of Obamacare, we're going to see budgets, we're going to see the rollback of regulation. This was the decision of the Republican Capitol Hill leadership, Ryan, McConnell, and their teams, along with the president. It's stunning to hear this man make excuses and to try to blame a president who is trying to do exactly what he promised he would do, which is roll back the establishment and move forward, leaving the status quo as far behind as possible.
Well, we all know that the Senate has a role as a deliberative body, which means it does move slowly on some issues, and that's kind of built in as a feature. But this has been 7 years that we've been talking about repealing and replacing Obamacare, and it's a vote that was taken when it didn't count. The Barack Obama, of course, vetoed the repeal of Obamacare. Now they have a chance to do it again, and they're balking at it. It would seem that that's far from excessive to expect the Senate to be able to do something after all that time.
The idea that this is excessive and somehow because the American people sent to the White House a president who had never run for elected office before with some sort of horrible miscalculation and burden for the great Senate majority leader means he misses the entire point of the election of 2016. This was an anti-status quo, anti-establishment election. And he should be working with, if he indeed has not been bought out by the Business Roundtable, the Chamber of Commerce, all of K Street and most of H Street, he should be working vigorously to move forward this agenda for the benefit of the American people.
It was interesting to hear you say that he's committed political suicide, and I agree with you. I think it's a great way to say that because earlier this week, Mitch McConnell criticized Trump's, quote, artificial deadlines with the health care debate. And President Trump is a businessman, and I think that's where his appeal comes in for those of us who actually work for a living as opposed to the politicians in Washington. He is a boss. We look at him as that man who this is how you get things done. And as workers, we understand that if you have a job to do, you just don't go home because it's time for your August recess. You don't take
right.
7 years to do a project, have your boss come to you and go, okay, let's do this. You go, wait a minute. This is an unrealistic deadline. So, and I think that's why people support the president because of that.
I think that's exactly right. And I think not only do they support this president, but they cannot figure out what makes Paul Ryan tick. The leadership, Ryan and McConnell together, have exposed the Republican Party right now. And either they choose new leadership and set a new pace working with and diligently for this president and his agenda, or the Republican Party in 2018 is going to be significantly smaller than it is right now.
Yeah.
We could actually see in the midterms the Republicans roll, you know, their majorities be rolled back, absolutely blasted away by a disgusted and appalled electorate whose leadership has exposed the rank and file in the Senate and the House for the dullards and the lazy son of a guns they all are. This is stunning. they have absolutely dropped the veil on who they are and who owns them.
You know,
it's not the American people.
You know, Mitch McConnell, I think, I'm not just speculating on what his argument will be here, is in part that he used every legislative tactic he could to try and get this thing out of the Senate. A lot of arm twisting going on all the way to the very end when you had John McCain stand in front of him, give him the stare down and the thumbs down. And Mitch McConnell clearly disappointed at that moment. Were you happy with his effort, or is the failure to get anything done enough for you to say, look, you no matter how you got there, you're a loser right now?
He is a loser. I'm not happy with any of his efforts. I find his tone appalling and his words to be so revelatory that I don't believe I know he will never recover politically from it. He should, with the few years he has left as a senator, try to do his best for the citizens of Kentucky, who I have to think right now are absolutely disgusted with the majority leader. And if the Republicans do not rally around new leadership and a new way forward, there's very little hope for them in 2018. And think about this. Strong majorities in both the House and the Senate, not as much in the Senate, but it's going to be both will be overturned, I have no doubt, unless the Republican Party recovers.
The problem is that no one primaries against McConnell. No one primaries against Ryan. This is the problem. So the voters have a choice between Mitch McConnell and like Alison Lindergan Grimes or another Democrat and they don't want to vote for him. And that's the problem. So
that is certainly one of the big problems. And I think that this new administration, if it had it to do over, would be supporting someone other than Mitch McConnell. I think this president wanted, and understandably so, to play nice. To work together,
yes.
To be a conciliator, as well as a powerful leading force in Washington.
Well, we're all going to be watching Mitch McConnell's future. Lou Dobbs from the Fox Business Network and the anchor of Lou Dobbs Tonight, available at 7 and 11 p.m. on the Fox Business Network every evening. Thank you so much for joining Mornings on the Mall today.
Thanks, Mary. Thank you very much.
Nice to have you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Ashley Judd. She did a Facebook Live video on Saturday from an unnamed airport where she goes into this whole thing about sexism that she encounters on a daily basis. And she used this experience as an example of this daily sexism that just permeates every aspect of our society. Rather than tell you what she said, I'm going to let you listen to part of what she said. This isn't the whole thing, but this is a good chunk of her Facebook Live video. And then we want to get your opinion on this. 888-630-9625. Here's Ashley Judd.
This must be horrible.
Hi, I'm Ashley Judd, and I'm going to do a little live post from the airport. I'm traveling today, and this is the kind of thing to me that happens, which I categorize as everyday sexism, and it's so easy to let it go, not to speak up, particularly when it's so easy for someone to push back and say, oh, I was just being polite, or something like that. So I was coming through security, and a guy said, hey, sweetheart. And I said, I'm not your sweetheart. I am your client.
Oh, boy.
So I was already setting a boundary.
Yes, you were.
And then when I was setting my things out, he said, hey, nice dress.
Oh.
I didn't hear him saying anything about the attire of any of the other folks.
That monster.
In the entire line. And I am in one of the most traveled airports in the world. I'm surrounded by lots and lots of other people in lots of different kinds of dress. I set my stuff on the doohickey.
The doohickey
that rolls. And I was speaking with one of his colleagues. She was saying, do you have on high heel shoes, whatever? And guess what happened next? He touched me.
Uh-oh.
I didn't see him touch anybody else.
More detail, Ashley.
And I turned around and I said, that was unnecessary. By the time, you know, my skin is burning, my feet are burning.
What?
It's so hard.
Was it an acid
to continue
attack?
To set these boundaries when someone continues to push. And then for good measure, he just said one more time, have a good day, sweetheart.
Oh. What an animal. That guy.
What a monster.
Have you ever heard such a horrific story from an airport? I don't think anyone's ever been treated like that. Her skin was burning, Mary.
Well, he clearly touched her with a Bible, so that's probably why. You know, I don't know if Ashley Judd realizes this, but the TSA touches a lot of people. That's why they wear those gloves, and a lot of times they touch you in very uncomfortable places. Now, I realize that she's not used to mingling amongst the masses, the unwashed of those of us around her in the airport.
Yeah, those of us who are less used to using the doohickeys at the airport.
Yes. So I'm sure she's used to, you know, being able to just go, oh, you're Ashley Judd. Come on through. So I have to tell you, I did not see this as sexist at all as a woman. If someone says to me, nice dress, I'm like, oh, thank you so much. You know, thank you for noticing. I appreciate it. Would she have preferred that he called her a nasty woman? Maybe that's what her comfort level is. I didn't find this to be, and listen, I've had a gentleman say to me, I was in the grocery store and I was looking for something. He was an older guy and he called me doll. What are you looking for, doll? And I realized, I acknowledged that, okay, this guy's older. And so I just said, and I told him what I'm looking for, and he helped me, and he told me where it was. No harm, no foul. My world is still spinning. My skin is not burning.
Well, do you remember, this is a good example of being in a store. Do you remember when Michelle Obama went to a Target in, I think it was in Northern Virginia, and she was walking around the Target. She wanted to be, like, you know, among the people. And somebody, she's a tall woman. A short woman comes up to her and says, hey, could you help me reach that thing? Not knowing this is, like, the First Lady of the United States. Michelle later relayed that story as one of racism. She just happens to be tall. And some woman who didn't know any better was like, excuse me, ma'am, could you help me reach that thing? She's like, she thought I worked there. Excuse me?
Wait, let's quickly go to Bob in College Park here, 888-630-9625.
I don't know if they've ever been sweetheart, but I know I've been patted down and had my groin touched and my rear end touched numerous times, as well as my private part touched numerous times by TSA.
And you don't even get a phone number. What the heck is that?
And I don't
about?
Get a phone number. I don't get a call back.
At least somebody's got good humor about this. It's certainly not Ashley Judd, though, Bob, because she gets in this line. And you'd think if you flip on a camera and you go live with it, you're going to give us a great story. Like, you're going to give us an incredible story of chaos and trauma. And instead, what we got was someone called me sweetheart and told me my dress was nice.
This is the best of Mornings on the Mall.
It's Ashley Judd working her way through security at an airport this week. Ashley, what happened to you?
And this is the kind of thing to me that happens, which I categorize as everyday sexism.
Everyday sexism. So be specific. What was the thing?
I was coming through security and a guy said, hey, sweetheart. And I said, I'm not your sweetheart. I am your client. So I was already setting a boundary.
You sure were. And then what happened?
And then when I was setting my things out, he said, hey, nice dress. I didn't hear him saying anything about the attire of any of the other folks.
Mary, you get called a sweetheart and complimented on your dress. That's a form of sexism that we cannot stand.
You know, I just want to say to Ashley, honey, just wait until you hit the age at which women become invisible and no one notices you and no one calls you honey or sweetheart and no one compliments you on what you're wearing. She'll complain about that.
That's never going to happen, Mary. I see all the women. I love them.
Aw, oh, you're sweet. 888-630-9625. Well, David in Manassas clearly suffers from the same problem that Ashley Judd does. David, good morning. You're on Mornings on the Mall. David, do people compliment you on your dress, too?
Well, you know, the rare occasions that I throw on a beautiful frock, I have had my compliment. I actually had a Mexican gentleman who grabbed my breast, and that's an entirely different story. But two real quick points. Yes. One, you do get a lot of, especially waitresses, older waitresses, who will refer to me as honey, darling, when they ask questions. And I don't take that as sexist. But interesting, you brought the story up about Michelle Obama. If you actually go back, when Michelle Obama first started telling that story, and I think it was David Letterman, she told it as a sweet, wonderful story, how nice this woman, you know, mistaken her and asked her for help. It was only after Black Lives Matter type situation started to come out that she turned it into a racial story. And
that's
always
right.
Points to the people. That shows how racially divisive that woman
Yeah, it was pretty
really
duplicitous.
Is.
David,
That's a good point.
But I got to say, being called honey and darling, I know your pain. As a fellow male model, I experience this all the time. So, David, I'm right there with you.
Let's go to Kate Manassas, probably right next to Dave there. Kate, good morning. You're on Mornings on the Mall. Kate, does this happen to you?
Well, yes. I'm from a big family. We called each other darling and sweetheart all the time. My dad couldn't remember all our names.
That's classic.
But I think Ashley Judd is practicing her acting skills as a victim. And
no,
she's
no
doing
question.
Pretty good at it.
No question.
I'm tired of these word burners. It's all I can call them.
Yeah, well, she's definitely getting her reps in on acting because she flips the camera on and then just starts complaining about this. But, I mean, but again, if you're going to come on, if you're going to get on Facebook Live and be upset about this, like, bring the goods. Like, tell us, like, what happened. The fact that you got called sweetheart and somebody said your dress was nice, okay, that does that rise to the level of flaming an entire security staff on Facebook Live? Probably not.
No, and the fact that I think most people are laughing at the fact that someone at the TSA touched her. That's pretty much what they're paid to do, is touch you. And she's really lucky she wasn't patted down. Can you imagine? She probably really seriously would have lost her mind if they had actually physically touched her. Like, patted her down, touched her.
Well, her skin was burning, Mary. I don't know
what
that
is
means.
That?
She was like, my skin was burning. It was on fire.
A commoner touched her, you know, one of the little people touched her, one of the working class, and she can't have that, her skin burns.
Those doohickey operators can be a real pain in the rear end.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. Of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Joining us right now is General Jack Keane. He's a retired four-star general, former vice chief of staff of the U.S. Army, and also chairman of the Institute for the Study of War, also a Fox News military analyst. Well qualified to give us his opinion on what is happening in North Korea. General, welcome to Mornings on the Mall. Good morning.
Good morning, Mary. Glad to be here.
So glad you could join us. What do you say to those who say that President Trump's words are inflaming the situation with North Korea?
I don't think this is all that important about the words. I think what I probably would not have selected those words, and likely Tillerson and Mattis wouldn't have either. But I think what the president is doing, which we all agree with, he is clearly telling North Korea that the previous policies of appeasement and accommodation of his predecessors is over, and that he is not going to accept North Korea putting the American people at risk. And if he has to take military action, as horrific as those consequences would be, he is telling them that he will. And that is critical to the change that must take place in the mindset of China and North Korea. And believe me, China is as complicit here as North Korea is. So that's really what is taking place here. What words he uses to describe that, I don't think is all that particularly important, but the message is clear. And if you're going to have deterrence like we had during the Cold War with the Soviet Union, there's two things you have to have. One is you have to have real military capability, and your adversary also has to believe that you would use it, that you have intent. In the last 8 years, our adversaries came to realize that President Obama would likely never, ever use military force. As a result of it, it emboldened our adversaries. Well, Trump is trying to play a hand, you know, in his own words, which are different maybe than other presidents would use, who would be more measured in their statements. But he's trying to accomplish the same thing. He's trying to say to the North Koreans, I don't want to go to war, but to avoid that war, I want you to understand I'm willing to go to war. Mm-hmm. And that's really the crucible.
Yeah, General James Mattis, among others yesterday, you know, the president expressed an openness to to still negotiating, although he said, really, we've tried that for decades and it really hasn't borne fruit. And meanwhile, General James Mattis is saying that, hey, it seems like the diplomatic effort is gaining some traction, courtesy of Nikki Haley and Rex Tillerson. Is an outcome of this that we do negotiate either directly with North Korea or through China?
Well, Secretary Tillerson has offered direct negotiations with the North Koreans. And there's, you know, there's people likely on the far right that are very opposed to something like that. But I think what Tillerson has said as a caveat, you know, to opening that discussion with him, he's the reason why North Korea, and I'll come back to the point what Tillerson's making, our audience has got to understand, the reason why the Kim dynasty wanted to have nuclear weapons is to preserve the regime. We all understand that. But Kim Jong-un has departed from his grandfather and his father, who acquired nuclear weapons. The United States acquiesced after that happened. He didn't believe that that was enough to preserve the regime. He's paranoid after he watched the United States in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya that the United States would come for him and change the regime. No other country would. But he knows the United States could. And that's what bothers him. So he decided to acquire nuclearized ICBMs and put the American people at risk, not just South Korea, the American people, a departure from his relatives, the Kim dynasty. And it's that very thing, obviously, that has us so much concern. But you have to understand his rationale, and there's a strategy associated with that. While his words are bellicose, his strategy from his perspective is quite sound. And so what Tillerson is trying to do and get inside Kim's head is that, look, I want to talk to you. And I want you to understand that we are not interested in changing out the regime, which is the reason for all that we're dealing with in terms of this crisis.
Yeah, we're at a obviously a very heightened state here with a country threatening nuclear attacks on the United States. But here, it seems to me that if you've got a rogue dictator threatening to attack the United States like this, it's kind of a bizarre way for him to earn a seat at the negotiating table, right?
Yeah, but I still don't blame the administration for doing that. What Tillerson said, he had a condition for it. He said, "I'll sit down and talk to you. But the condition is you have to stop testing, all right? And you have to agree that you're not going to shoot any more missiles, and then we're going to talk about the way ahead and how can we work something out in terms of our mutual benefit." So if that condition is not granted, you know, he's not going to have the discussion. Kim fired right back at that offer from Tillerson and said this. He said, "I'm not sitting down at the negotiation table where my nuclear capability is on the table as a negotiating item." So this negotiation is unlikely to take place.
General Kane, there is a piece on Fox News written by Fred Flights that alleges that back in the Obama administration in 2013, they knew that North Korea had the ability to put these miniaturized nuclear weapons on warheads and yet chose to do nothing about it and try to conceal that information. Do you agree? Do you know that to be true?
I don't know if that's true, but given the things that we have found out about the Obama administration and how they manipulated the Congress over the nuclear deal with the Iranians and created absolutely false information. I mean, that's very disappointing to know that, but I've been disappointed before, and it doesn't surprise me. They had a tendency to kind of want to hide the conditions that would possibly lead to some kind of confrontation with our adversaries. And they also two things that bothered me quite a bit about them. They exaggerated their successes in dealing with foreign policy and national security and minimized the danger. And that certainly was true of radical Islam. It was true of what was taking place in Syria. It was true of the nuclear deal and also Russian and North Korea adventurism. So that doesn't surprise me, but I have no knowledge of it.
All right, okay. General Jack Keane, thanks for helping us keep an eye this morning on North Korea, what's going on there, as the entire country pays attention, especially the President of the United States, was this morning tweeting again about this just minutes ago. General Jack Keane, thank you very much for stopping by Mornings on the Mall.
Yeah, wonderful. Good talking to you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Well, here's an Uber driver that deserves 5 stars. And if you could do more than that, probably that too. On Monday in Florida, St. Petersburg, Florida, there was an Uber driver by the name of Chad Farley who was driving around, you know, of course, looking for passengers. And he gets a notification that he has one and he picks him up. And the gentleman that he picked up says, "Take me to the middle of the Sunshine Skyway Bridge." Okay. So he's en route to the Sunshine Skyway Bridge. Apparently, it's a popular place for people to attempt suicide.
Oh, okay.
And it's been, I guess, a regular problem to some extent. There's no walkway for pedestrians along the span, nowhere even to step safely, according to the St. Petersburg Times. I think it's the Tampa Times now, actually. He takes them there, and on the way, he begins to sense, okay, well, obviously something's wrong here. So he begins chatting up the man, and he finds out that he has brain cancer. Ugh. So in the process, he said he was getting out, but before he did, I told him how much God loves him. I prayed for him. I held his hand, he said. He was talking about that he picked him up from his house. He started the conversation. He was telling me how he'd gotten the news from his doctor that he had brain cancer. I told him about my mother who'd passed from cancer. I asked him if he was in school. He said yes, that he wanted to be a counselor, and that he wanted to help hopeless people. I commended him for that. And he noticed something was up with his passenger and obviously had this conversation with him. He said he prayed for him. He took his hand, and he said it was unbelievable how much he was shaking with him. At one point, he decided to take a photo. He said they basically wanted to take a photo. He's like, would you mind taking a photo with me? So he did, and the guy who wanted to commit suicide, you know, held up a peace sign in the photo, and he said he used it. And as soon as the guy gets out of the car at his destination, the middle of this bridge, he instantly calls the police and sends them the photo. So, you know, he two parts. He's trying to set the guy's mind at ease, trying to tell him he's loved, prays for him, prays with him, and then he gets out of the car, and then he instantly notifies authorities who are able to get there in time and stop this guy from taking his own life.
Wow.
So this guy, I mean, went way above and beyond the call of duty that's involved with a simple app pickup. I mean, I can't imagine how many strange people you might pick up if you're just driving in a taxi service, Uber, Lyft, whatever, who you deal with on any given night. Anywhere, nevertheless, in Florida, of all places, where Florida Man happens to live, just the people you deal with, where you often think to yourself, okay, just get out of my car, weirdo. Like, okay, whatever. I'm going to drop you off. You're going to be out of my life. I'm going to move on to the next thing. And in this case, Chad Farley did the exact opposite. He acted, and he saved this guy's life.
That's amazing.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, and he said, you know, when he realized where the destination was that he had picked, he realized it was in the center of the bridge. And when he asked him, well, why are we going there? The passenger, this young man, 28 years old, said that he planned to call an ambulance to take him to his doctor in Tampa. And he said, well, that didn't really sound right to me. So when they were at the toll booth, he said he made eye signals to the attendant, the driver, to the attendant that something's up with my passenger.
Right.
And a supervisor at the booth advised that he proceed to the safety of the rest area near the pier and use the phone there to call the ambulance.
Good call.
So once they were there, that's how they had this conversation, and that's why how they could get out to take the picture and how he could stand there and hold his hand and pray with him. So he was buying time, which was very, very smart. So people knew there was something up. And about 8:30 is when they finally parted company after taking the picture, and he called 911.
Well, this is quick thinking, and of course Uber should be celebrating this. And
yes.
You've got apparently his main hustle. We call the Uber the side hustle. His main hustle is he's a leader at his Baptist church. He's a part of the Community Bible Baptist Church, and he says he treats his Uber driving as an extension of his ministry. Quote, riders open up to you about a lot of things. True. you wouldn't expect them to tell strangers. I keep my church business card in the car. If someone's hurting, I give it to them. And that's kind of true, actually. Of all of the veil, I mean, it used to be, I think, that you like confess things to your bartender, but now people just sit and are buried in their phones. But when you're with a hired driver these days, it seems like that's the person you're like, I'm never going to see this guy again. I may as well get this weight off my shoulders, or I may as well have this private conversation in the car. No big deal. I'm never going to see the guy who's driving me again.
HBO actually had a show about this about 10 years ago called Taxi Cab Confessions. And what people would tell these taxi cab drivers, and they were trained to ask them questions and everything, and then they would sign the waiver at the end of it.
Yeah, well, in this case, it definitely paid off. That confession saved that man's life.
Wow. Kudos to this man. Incredible.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
So, Serena Williams says she can't wait to be a real woman, she will reach that pinnacle once she gives birth. Do you agree with her? She got a lot of blowback on social media saying, basically equating, you can't really be a real woman unless you give birth. And so does that mean that men aren't real men until they become fathers? Is that the equivalent here?
I don't know. I feel like my journey into manhood was more completed by having a child. So maybe.
There you go. Gina in Manassas, good morning. You are on Mornings on the Mall. Gina, do you agree with Serena Williams?
Good morning. I think it's just something that she's right and that is uniquely impressive and amazing what only we as women can do, which is to give birth to other little humans. And it's just something like her tennis. It's like, wow, watch me now.
But listen, I think that she probably did. It came out the wrong way. I get it.
Yeah.
I truly believe that's what happened here. She didn't mean that, you know, the way it's being interpreted. But do you agree, though? Do you think that that's the way to be a real woman? The only way you can be a real woman is to have children.
I do. As a mom, I agree. It's another level of womanhood. I will say that. And I think if you're not, whether you choose to or you cannot have your own children, I do think that it's a piece that it is an experience you're missing. That's all.
It's an experience that's missing, but you know, and this is, thank you very much. Let's just leave it at that, that it's an experience you're missing and it makes you less of a woman because you didn't experience that. Steven Rustin, good morning. You're on Mornings on the Mall. Steve, do you agree with Serena?
Good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
Remember Mother Teresa. World Mother Teresa, she's not a real woman. She doesn't know. She's not a real woman. Jesus is not a real man. The Apostle Paul, who wrote 60% of the New Testament, he ain't a man. Just take it to lunch. Take it to lunch, academia.
That's a very interesting point there, Steve. Thank you very much. Yeah, see, and again, I guess it really hits home for me because I've chosen not to have children. It was my choice, and that was my choice, and I don't think it makes me less of a woman, and I don't think it makes my mother or my aunt or my cousins less of women because they chose to adopt children. I just don't think that it makes them less, or they haven't attained the same height of womanhood by choosing to adopt a child, as opposed to physically giving birth.
Well, the religious aspect to this is interesting because we're all called to something different. Not everybody answers their calling, by the way, but we're all called to something different. And the goal is to try and live as fulfilling, to try and identify that and then live as fulfilling a life as possible within the confines of your calling.
888-630-9625. Are you less of a woman if you've never given birth?
This is the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Serena Williams says, well, if you want to be that woman, she's looking forward to giving birth next month so she can finally be a real woman. And she got the backlash again was swift and yes, intense. And people saying, hey, you know, I didn't know that I had to give birth.
That's so right. The entire internet was working on their backhand.
Yes.
Yes.
Really unfortunate statement from her. All women are real, not just the ones who give birth.
Serena Williams and her sister Venus have been defined as sort of masculine tennis players for many years now. And she probably is like, okay, fine, whatever. Like, I've made a lot of money doing this. But there's a part of her that's like, I just want to feel feminine. I want people to think of me as a woman. And having a baby, yeah, that's like a real woman thing to do. And maybe that, maybe it's within that context she was answering these questions.
Yeah, especially with her, especially with Serena Williams. She's really been taken to task for her appearance because she is so muscular. So I think it's a great point.
In the body issue, the ESPN body issue, just like that pose. Or she's aggressive. That's a muscular chick.
It's amazing. Claudia in Gainesville, good morning. You're on Mornings on the Mall. Is Serena right?
Good morning, Mary and Vince. I don't know what Serena's take is, but I certainly don't think that you're less of a woman if you don't have a child. There are plenty of women who have children that shouldn't. They abuse or neglect them or even indifferent to them. That doesn't make them more of a woman than someone who did not have any children.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And I guess, and I keep saying this because I have so many adopted children in my family and my aunts and cousins and things like that. I think that I give so much credit to those women who said, you know what, I'm going to take a child in who I didn't give birth to, but I'm going to love and raise as my own child. To me, that's just such a Herculean task to be able to do something. And the woman who gave that child up, I think that's an incredible Herculean task as well.
Yeah, and to be a real man or a real woman is not narrowly defined by one act as much as like giving birth, again, is quintessentially woman. It's to live up to all the various aspects of that calling. In case you talk about women who adopt children, to be nurturing of those children, to care for them, is a very important aspect of being a real woman in the lives of those kids. Yeah.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM WMAL.